Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Edition of On the Double with the Double S Express. Yours truly, Sean Boyd, alongside, yes, I did say, alongside my broadcast partner, the other half of the Double S Express, Sean Wally, a special edition. Both of us joined together down here in Northern California. Sean, how you doing this evening, man?
What's going on, Sean? It's definitely a great show and a great time here in Northern California.
Well, you know, first things first, we have to talk about the big game that happened in Candlestick in San Francisco. The San Francisco 49ers with something to prove yesterday in playing your beloved Seattle Seahawks. Man, Sean, give us a little bit about the fanfare, what you experienced as a fan at Candlestick Park.
Well, first and foremost, you know, I definitely have the Seattle Seahawks on my heart. But I was working for Fox for the TV broadcast, and it was a total experience. And that was the idea, was to work a game with you down in your neck of the woods. And now I had the chance to see Candlestick for the first time, the last time that the Seattle Seahawks will be there, and the very last day game. So it truly was interesting to see a stadium that's going to be imploded, demolished, however you want to say it, that will no longer be here. And now I got a chance to say at least I was there for one day.
Yes, exactly, Sean Wally. We witnessed something very nostalgic. The last day game, the San Francisco 49ers having something to prove, and I believe that that was one of the reasons why I believe they came out and played very strong against Seattle, taking nothing away from the Seattle Seahawks. Of course, for those of you who watched the game, it was a very hard-fought battle. I don't know if this is a precursor of things to come if these guys meet down the road, but I can say on that day, the San Francisco 49ers definitely came to play, Sean Wally.
Oh, absolutely. It's the couple of the top defenses in the whole NFL, and so you expected a lower-scoring slobber knocker to where it took some time to fill each team out and have those offenses figure out, how can I beat what the other defense is doing? And it went down to the very end, the final minute, for a field goal to win it.
You, of course, this being your first time down to Candlestick Park, and this is something that I go through week after week, and of course, working for Fox, both of us working for Fox Sports. Give us a little bit on, you know, some of the things that, as a matter of fact, let's just do this because we have Max Strong on the line right now, and this is our holy smoke nuts, almond smoke nuts portion of the show. And we have Max Strong on the line with us. Mac, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. You guys?
Great, great. Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. And Mac, you know, we were just talking about some of the goings on as far as the festivities yesterday. Of course, you have an invested interest in watching this game. Of course, Seattle taking on the San Francisco 49ers. First, the last two games, Seattle has dominated San Francisco, and of course, they did that with the 12th man up in Seattle. Give us a little insight on what, you know, the Seahawks were going through possibly in preparation in the locker room going into this divisional game.
Well, I mean, obviously it was a big game for these guys. You think about they had the opportunity to wrap up the NFC West, which is, you know, goal number one for this team coming into the season was, you know, even though they have a berth in the playoffs, their number one goal was always to win a division. You take care of the division first, and then you start thinking about other things after that, whether it's, you know, having the overall number one seed in the NFC or having the first round bye, that kind of stuff. That's all secondary and kind of that stuff. But the number one deal is you want to win a division. So going into this game, I mean, this is, I mean, I'm talking about two of the better teams. The National Football League, you know, San Francisco 49ers and the Seattle Seahawks. And those guys will be playing, you know, again here at primetime, you know, down there in San Francisco. a lot riding on that game for the Seahawks. It was, you know, opportunity, like I said, so the division for the 49ers. It was to hope, you know, keep their playoff hopes alive. They're, you know, still in this thing trying to figure out if they can get a wild card spot, which they seem to be well on their way towards doing and accomplishing. So it was a very good, very hard fought, tough ball game, you know, to play. And it was really a good ball game to watch too. I really enjoyed it. I thought both teams played excellent, and it was, I think just as a football fan, it was one of the better football games I've seen this year.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Mac. This was one of the better games that I've seen. It was a back and forth style game. You know, each team was taking the other team's punches. Of course, with the Seahawks, there were a few guys that come to mind, you know, that it was somewhat of a homecoming. Of course, you had Richard Sherman playing at Stanford, Doug Baldwin as well. And then, of course, Marshawn Lynch growing up in Northern California in the Bay Area. You handled the pregame and the postgame for the Seahawks. Kind of give us an insight on the feelings of those guys both before the game and after the game.
Well, I mean, those guys are, you know, really excited. I mean, anytime you can go back and play in the city where you played your college ball, you know, I think that's always a plus. You know, I think it's always kind of the highlight of a guy's career. And, you know, all three of those guys you just named are playing extremely well this year. They're big reasons why. Those are three big reasons why the Seahawks are 11-2 right now. It's because of Richard Sherman, Doug Baldwin, and Marshawn Lynch. And, you know, I think you look extra added bonus, I think, for Richard and for Doug, you know, having played for Jim Harbaugh at Stanford during his days there. You know, they obviously been in the same division. They play each other twice a year. And so it's an opportunity for them to show their old coach, you know, just, you know, their skills and kind of have that rivalry a little bit, you know, kind of with him, a chess match. He probably feels like he knows those players extremely well and what they're capable of doing. And obviously they want to go out and they want to impress, you know, their former coach that, you know, they've taken that next step in it being elite players in this league, which, you know, I feel like both those players are. And then Marshawn Lynch, I mean, who, you know, he's coming from the streets of Oakland and, you know, he's just talking about just, you know, growing up just, you know, really rough and you know, having some troubles early on in his career, but now being in a place where he can really call home. And he's beloved, trust me, in Seattle. He is a hero of sorts. And so, you know, I know it's an opportunity for him to go back to where his roots are and the way it all sort of began for him. So, yeah, just, you know, I'm sure those guys just haven't played the game for a long time. I know they were probably – that was in the back of their mind. But the number one goal is to win the football game. And so to not accomplish that, all three of those guys were just pointed afterwards. You know, they felt like they left some plays out there. They didn't play their best game for sure, you know, offensively. You know, I think really comes to mind, all, you know, denying penalties that they had, I think really kind of negated some opportunities there to really move the ball and maybe score some extra points. And so, you know, you got to tip your hat and give credit to San Francisco 49ers. They did a great job, you know, defensively of you know, making things really tough for the Seattle Seahawks, and at times, I think, frustrating them. And so, but I think for all those guys, you know, their number one goal, no matter where they're playing at or who they're playing against, I mean, their number one goal is to win the football game. And so not to have accomplished that, you know, I think it was very disappointing for those guys.
How should the Seattle Seahawks as a team feel after this loss, and how should the fans feel? They're still 11-2. They're still on top of the NFC. But are there a couple kinks in the armor after this game?
Well, I think this is a good lesson game. I think that's the way that the guys are talking about it, you know, today. And I think to a man on that team, you know, after the game, everybody talked about how disappointed they were. And that, you know, they were, in a way, it was kind of a blessing in disguise. Because, look, if you this team, much like San Francisco, they have their eyes set on getting to the Super Bowl. And they're trying to do everything they can to get to that game. And, you know, they can't play the way they did yesterday and make it in the game. I mean, it's from a standpoint of just making those mistakes, making the silly penalties and those type of things, they'll hurt you. And if you give up, you know, big plays like the defense did, as they gave up a couple big plays, I felt like, in the passing game. And obviously that 51-yard Frank Gore run there in the fourth quarter to kind of help seal the deal for them and get them in range to get the chip shot field goal to seal it. That was disappointing for those guys. They've made plays earlier, you know, all throughout the year But some of it was self-inflicted wounds and what they created themselves, and so they're going to have to go back and clean that up. But, you know, they're not moralized from this game. This doesn't in any way take away from what they've accomplished this year and where they're sitting at. They still got everything right out there in front of them. They still have the best record in the NFC. They're still on pace to, if they win two of the next three games, that they could wrap up the number one overall seed and get a first-round bye. And force anybody in the NFC, if you want to get to the Super Bowl, you're going to have to come through the clink in Seattle. And so that's, a place where they play extremely well, and it's hard, I think, for any team to go up there and have any type of success. So all those things are still out there for them. It doesn't change that. Would they have loved to have won the game? Absolutely. I think that's, anytime you go out on the field, you want to compete, you want to win. But they're not demoralized from it. I think it was a great learning lesson for them, and they'll go back and they'll get ready to go down and play a struggling New York Giants football team.
How do you see the current 2013 Seattle Seahawks team in comparison to the only other Super Bowl team in Seattle, and that was the team you were on, the 2005 season that went 13-3?
You know, there's a lot of comparisons there. I think the thing that's really unique about this team, though, is that defensively, I think they're a little bit better than what our defense was in 2005. I mean, offensively, we had a ton of weapons. I mean, we had five Pro Bowlers on that team, six Pro Bowlers, I think, on the offensive side of the football, and had four All Pros, and had what was considered the best left side in football, and our future Hall of Fame left tackle Walter Jones, and then Steve Hutchinson right next to him, and then had the NFL MVP Sean Alexander in the backfield, and along with myself and Matt Hasselbeck, back. And we're just very talented. We had a very talented offense, and we had all played together for a long time, and we were number one offensive football that year. But defensively, you know, we were kind of a bend don't break, defense. And this is this defense they have right now is really an elite defense. I mean, they're number one overall in the league. And they can shut people down, and they can get after you pretty good. And they didn't. I don't think they played their best game yesterday. And they also, you think about they lost KJ Wright, starting linebacker. They lost Max Unger. Those are the things that, this time of the year, is a little concerning, because you don't want to have injuries at the end of the year. You want guys to be getting healthy and be playing your best football. So there's a lot of comparisons, but this team is super talented. They got them, and they have all the ingredients and, I think the makeup to get to the big game and to win it all.
Max Strong, kind enough to join us on the Double with the Double S Express. This is the Holy Smoke Nuts portion of our show. Mac, you had mentioned, Sean mentioned the 2005 season that you had played, the Super Bowl season, and the comparison between that team and this team. Can you share a little bit? Because the 2005 team, I believe, was the beginning of the 12th man. Can you kind of give the fans and the listeners a comparison between 2005 and the fans of today?
I would agree with you. I think we were just, I think, becoming known. We were just starting to have some success, really. 2003 was kind of the beginning of a five-year run that we enjoyed in the playoffs. And so 2003 through 2007, we went to the playoffs five straight years. And so it was a time, it was kind of a resurgence in the Seattle area and the community. I mean, this is a town it's a football town. I mean, people love their football. They love their Seahawks. They've been loyal to them, most of our fans, since the beginning, 1976. It's not a very old franchise at all, but they have a very loyal following. And so, to get to a point where you were the first team in franchise history to make it to the Super Bowl, people were just excited. And we had very much the same type of atmosphere back then, same type of dominance at home. I mean, we were, I think in 2003, I think we might have been 8-0 at home. We didn't play very well on the road that year, but we won all eight of our games at home. In 2005, we won all eight of our games at home. And this year, so far, they're undefeated at home. And so it's something that I think our fans become accustomed to. They become used to it. They're kind of spoiled that way. They expect that, you know, when we play a game at Central Lake Field, that the Seahawks will prevail. And they do everything within their power to ensure that happening. You know, whether that means those guys are going to be swinging towels or whether they're going to be standing up yelling the whole time and breaking, you know, the noise record for world's loudest outdoor stadium or whatever it's going to take. I mean, they feel like they have a part in that. And I think, you know, the affection they have for this team is undeniable, you know, as evidenced by, you know, just how hard they make it on opposing teams to come in here and have any type of success as an organization. And so it's definitely something that's grown over time. I feel like, you know, this year, what I've seen from the 12th man, is, I tell you, it's like no other. I mean, it's an all-time high. These guys are, you know, they show up 3 hours before the game, and they're still around, you know, about 2.5-3 hours after the game. Just still there's a buzz in the air, you know, I think in the Seattle area about the team, because I think people understand, they sense that this is a good team, and that they could actually go all the way and win it all.
Now I'm going to put you a little bit on a limb here, because you come from, born and raised in Fort Benning, Georgia. You come from a long line of organizations and programs, of course, being the SEC in college, playing at Georgia. Give us a comparison, because to me, there's no greater love than the SEC. Of course, you know, myself, you know, playing at Auburn. Give us a comparison, because you're saying that the 12th man is second to none. Now, that's in comparison to professional. Is that correct? Or is that the whole nine? We're including the SEC in college football as well.
That's a little bit comparing apples to oranges, you know, because I think in college football, just in general, there's an electric atmosphere that I don't know that I've been to very, not consistently around the National Football League do you find that. I mean, especially in the SEC. I mean, you know, having played there yourself. I mean, first of all, you have every stadium seemed like it's like 90,000 or more, 80 or 90,000 or more. I mean, people just go crazy. And for a lot of those teams in the SEC, they're the only show in town. You know, they don't have they don't have like a professional football team or professional basketball team or anything else. And so the people really get excited about football down there. I mean, they are just rabid about it. And you know, it's, and especially at some of the schools that have had the, you know, the rich history, you know, some of the national titles, Alabama. I mean, I don't, how many national titles do they have? I mean, it's double digits. You know, Auburn, you know, this year, you know, turning out, they've already won a national title. The SEC alone, the conference as a whole, six straight national titles, and have the opportunity to go for a seventh. So they're used to being successful. I think the fans down there, they get behind it. They love it. You know, there's nothing better to do on a Saturday night than to be a Bulldog. You know, that's what we used to say at Georgia. I'm sure they probably had that. Every college around the SEC was saying the same thing. There's nothing you would rather be doing than be on a Saturday afternoon in the fall than to be, you know, cheering on your team to a victory. And so you know, it's not quite the same animal, you know, because you can go to some professional games and, boy, the crowd is just as dead and as quiet as a mouse. But, you know, you can go to any place in college football. And I think there's just something about watching, you know, the enthusiasm that young men have. You know, they're still playing at a high level. And they're trying to get to the next level. They're trying to get to that professional level. And I think the fans really appreciate that. They appreciate, you know, guys the high level of intensity they play with and the effort and the skill level. And I think it's just something that's just exciting to watch.
How did playing in the SEC and playing at Georgia, how did that prepare you for life in the NFL? And what did you have to learn your first year or two in the NFL with the Seahawks?
I feel like just being at Georgia, I mean, that's one of those perennial, you know, top 20 programs in the country, you know, being at Georgia and it's one of those that's well-known, well-respected. And, you know, I think a lot of guys, myself included, you know, when you choose to, you know, accept a scholarship to go to University of Georgia, for you know, vast majority of those guys, you have hopes and dreams to go to the next level to play professional football. And it was no different for me. And that's the way they kind of prepared you, you know, to play at the next level. The demand, the expectation level there was – was, you know, I can't speak what it's like at any other school around the country, but I just got to believe that, you know, I don't know if there's any place that was any harder, you know, to play, you know, just the caliber of coaching we got, just the level of expectation from the fans, you know, this the degree of skill of all the different players you play at other, you know, SEC schools. It's just something about that. It just brings out the best in you. And I think it just prepares you just by competing. I mean, each week, it didn't matter who you were playing. I mean, you could play Alabama one week and Auburn the next week and Florida the week after that, South Carolina, and all those guys would be ranked in the top 20. And so if you had to get up for every single game, there was no kind of downtime and there was no kind of powder puff, you know, team on the schedule. Every week you had to get up and play, you know, at a very high level and be ready emotionally with and play with intensity. And you couldn't be down. And I think that's the type of attitude and I think psyche you have to have to play in the National Football League. You can't take a day off. You can't take a week off. You can't take a game off. I mean, it's too important. Too many things are you know, very critical for you to get your job done. And so I just think having that high expectation level that feeling of just having to compete every single week, week in and week out, and even day in and day out of practice. I mean, just going against guys who were future pros, who would, you knew would play at the next level. I think that just prepared me extremely well for playing in the National Football League. And as far as what I had to learn that, you know, this, once you get here, that's only half the battle. I mean, that's the easy part. Staying here is something totally different. I mean, so just being able to just take care of your body and just making sure you eat right and sleep right and, you know, you just make good decisions because this is your livelihood. I mean, I remember walking in the door and my coach saying, hey, you know, we're only going to keep five, maybe six guys. There were nine guys in the room. And he said, we're going to keep five, maybe six, and the rest of you, good luck. I mean, that was my introduction into the National Football League. And I knew at that moment that something was going to have to change, that, you know, I was going to have to, you know, definitely fight my butt off if I wanted to be a part of the team. And I was going to have to stay hungry like that week, you know, year in and year out, if I wanted to have any type of longevity. Luckily, I mean, I felt like I had some good guys in front of me that I got a chance to learn from. I watched them and how they went about their business and just, you know, just being professionals. And I think it really helped me out. So just sort of imitating their attitude and their approach to it, I think, helped me to be successful.
Okay, good.
Everybody get up.
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. A couple final minutes here with Mac Strong, former Seattle Seahawk fullback. And Mac, outside of your analyst duties on the Seahawk Radio Network and as well as with Q13 Sports and Aaron Levine and your various shows that you're handling great analyst duties, you've also got your own thing going with StrongAlliance.org, and I believe you're coaching and giving leadership training to the corporate world. Is that correct?
Yeah. We do a lot of team building and corporate team building training and stuff like that. A lot of different corporations I've worked with. I've gone in and done motivational speaking, corporate team building training for Microsoft and Boeing and some of the biggest Starbucks, some of the biggest companies in this area, and as well as just other places across the country. So just very excited about that. And I have my own foundation called the Max Strong Teamwork Foundation, where it's a youth development program where we help kids to develop strong mind, bodies, and character. So very, very proud of that. My wife and I, actually have the opportunity to work together on both of those endeavors, and we're enjoying it. And my wife is getting her doctorate degree in educational psychology and doing a lot of different research. And so we're very busy people, but we love what we're doing, and we love just giving back to the community and working with kids.
That's Mac Strong, kind enough to join us on the Double with the Double S Express. Hey, Mac, thanks for taking the time out with us. We apologize for the difficulty earlier on. We wish you, the best down the road. And for those of you, again, who are looking into something in the realms of what Mac is doing, you can go to Strong Alliance, StrongAlliance.org. That's StrongAlliance.org. Feel free to go online and take a look at the website, Matt. And we wish you the best of success down the road.
I appreciate it.
That's Mac Strong, former Seattle Seahawk fullback, great, joining us on the Double with the Double S Express. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we will have guest number two on the show. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the Double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Boyd alongside Sean Wally here in Northern California, taking a quick break from a great first guest, Sean Wally, Mac Strong on the show. He had some good insight.
Oh, definitely. Mac is a fabulous mind when it comes to football, and he knows how to get to the top ranks as he survived 14 seasons in the NFL, played in the SEC at the University of Georgia, helped the Seattle Seahawks get to their only Super Bowl after the 2005 season, went to Super Bowl XL in Detroit, And now he takes his talents to the microphone, and he is an analyst for the Seattle Seahawks radio network on the pre- and post-game show, as well as for Q13 Fox, helping out the sports department with Aaron Levine on a few Seahawks shows and doing good things in Seattle.
You know, Sean Wiley, I must apologize to our listeners. This is a lot like the game that we saw yesterday between the Seahawks and the 49ers. We're kind of rolling into halftime here, man. We apologize for the technical difficulties, and, you know, we're making some adjustments here. But I believe that we're back in the fold, man, and so we're ready to go. We have our guest number two that's now on the line, and this is a part of the HolySmokeNuts.com portion of the show. We have Paul Gackle of the GackleReport.com on the line. Hey, Paul, how you doing today, man?
Good, man.
Hey, thanks for being on the show, man. And, you know, of course, this was a great weekend for you. Of course, you covering the San Francisco 49ers on a daily and a weekly basis. You know, kind of give us an insight here on what your thoughts were of the game.
It was definitely a game that the 49ers obviously had to win. They went out there and they won the game. So that's definitely, you know, a positive sign for them. You know, it's been a while since they've fallen. So, yeah. And I thought it was probably one of the most balanced games they've played all year. You know, decent offensive showing, defense great. So all around they look pretty good. Got to be happy with what they got. Having said that, the last two games of these teams have had and handed it to them up there, and then they come down to Candlestick and they barely squeak one out. So I look at it as a measuring stick. I still think you got to give the edge to the Seahawks in this rivalry right now.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I would give that edge to the Seattle Seahawks as well. But, you know, you have to give, you know, the San Francisco 49ers some credit. There was some true grit, a chance to hold serve at home. There's a little bit of a nostalgia going on. Of course, this being the last day game at Candlestick Park, and no better way than to win against your, you know, your divisional rival. And so, you know, hats off to the San Francisco 49ers for actually coming out and taking care of business yesterday.
Absolutely, and, you know, they did something there in that game that they haven't really done in some of their recent big games, the loss against New Orleans, the loss to the Carolina Panthers, and the loss to Indianapolis, which is they made plays in the fourth quarter. And that's something that's been severely lacking from their repertoire in some of these big games. And for Frank Gore to bust off that 51-yard run right there on that final drive, that was obviously huge. And just as big a play, if not a bigger play, as Colin Kaepernick able to scramble for that first down on, what was it, the 3rd and 6 right down there that sort of allowed them to run the clock down right there at the end and kind of allowed them to give Seattle the ball back with very little time. I felt like if they weren't able to get that first down there, Seattle would have had a really good chance of coming back and taking a field goal maybe the other way to win the game. So I think that, you know, that's one thing that the 49ers really should be patting themselves in the back is that they were in a close game, and this time they were able to make some plays, which has been sort of lacking from them lately.
Yeah, and you hit it right on the head, Paul, especially those two key plays, talking about the Frank Gore 51-yard run, but more importantly, that play that Colin Kaepernick made, that was somewhat like an old USC play, a student body left. And I know Sean Wiley and myself, we were, you know, looking at each other, and Sean says, well, you know, are they going to pass? And I said, there's no way in the world Colin's going to get rid of that football in this situation and give up at least 3 points. But what I didn't expect was the whole offensive line to shift and move to the left. Design play, you know, and Colin needed 6.5 yards, got 7. Shoot, he could lean for 3, but it was definitely a strong, gutsy call by the San Francisco 49ers.
It was a gutsy call. And I was thinking the same thing as you. There's no way they were going to pass on that down because they couldn't afford an incomplete pass and stopping the clock. They needed to make sure that they ticked everything off there that they could. And so it was a gutsy call, and I was kind of surprised that they actually were able to pick it up against that Seattle defense. But like you said, you know, being able to shift the line over and setting up that run the way they did, you got to tip your hats off to Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman for, you know, kind of going with that at that time, and it was exactly what they needed to do, because there's no way I can't see another, maybe, I don't know if I can see another run play in their arsenal that would have got the 6.5 yards at that point.
If we played this game, Paul, 10 times, how many do the Seahawks or the 49ers win?
At Candlestick Park, or are we?
That's a good question also. So, yeah, I would say at Candlestick Park, how many times do the 49ers win this game?
I'll give the Niners 7 wins, maybe.
Good. That's a high number. 7. Well, I'd probably say, somewhere around...
Maybe 6. Obviously, yesterday was pretty even, Steven, for the most part. You got to give the home team a little bit of an edge in this one. But if you ask me the question overall, I would say Seattle 7 times. If it was a 5-5, maybe. And if it was 10 games up there, I'd give Seattle all 10 of them, maybe 9 of them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, that was an awesome football game. I mean, for those of you, if you weren't a Niner fan or a Seahawk fan and you're just a football lover, that was a great football game to watch yesterday.
It was a great game. It lived up to all the hype. And, you know, the games up in Seattle just really haven't been doing it. They've been blowouts. So it was a great game. Came right down, you know, to the very end. Couldn't have asked for too much more. And just the nature of the game, tough physical football. You know, with all the, you know, the offense that we see in the game these days, it's just nice to see a game like that. That's about, you know, people, you know, the war at the line of scrimmage, you know, physicality on the receivers and in the secondary. You know, it wasn't like the game against New Orleans last week where Russell Wilson was able to just bust out and pick up 8, 9 yards of time when he wanted to scramble and get out of the pocket. I think back to it. I mean, the one play that comes to mind where I sort of realized off the bat that this was going to be a tight game was when that first possession for the Seahawks, when Wilson tried to kind of go out right there, and Navarro Bowman was able to chase him down. I think he was a little surprised there. And that's kind of set the tone for the 49ers right there in the first possession.
That's the voice of Paul Gackel. You can follow him at Gackel Report on Twitter, or read his blog at GackelReport.com. Paul, if you're starting an NFL franchise tomorrow,
do you want
Russell Wilson or Colin Kaepernick leading the way at quarterback?
Right now I want Russell Wilson. At this point, I don't think that there's any question right now that at this point in time, Wilson is the more advanced quarterback. They both obviously have the great running ability, but I think Wilson just seems a little more elusive at this point. We haven't really seen Kaepernick run the way he did last year as often this year. And the way I watched Wilson just break out, like I said, against the Saints, I really like that. I think he has a better grasp and understanding of what defenses are trying to do against them right now. And he looks like a real student of the game. I really like what I'm seeing about him. Now, obviously, I wonder if Colin Kaepernick doesn't still have more potential upside, because I think his pure, raw, physical tools are still above and beyond maybe any quarterback we've ever seen in this league. Because when he gets going, he can take off awfully fast. And, you know, he just looks, those strides are just so smooth, and he just gains ground so quickly. And his arm, there's no doubt about the arm strength that guy has. You saw some of those fastballs yesterday. Crabtree couldn't even hold on to one of them. So I think Kaepernick has maybe the more, he's more gifted in terms of what he's been given athletically, just the raw tools. But I like Russell Wilson right now. The question is whether Kaepernick over time, because, you know, he's still a second-year guy. He didn't even have a full season under his belt last year. And what kind of progression are we going to see from him as he, you know, gets a little more comfortable in this league and maybe a little more comfortable with what defenses are trying to do against them, and kind of masters the ability to read through his progressions a little bit better.
Paul, with the 49ers beating the Seahawks yesterday, there's now a 2-game difference in the NFC West in terms of top dog. Do the Niners have a shot at catching the Seahawks? Do you think the Seahawks will trip up as we head through the rest of December?
I think the Seahawks should be able to have a handle on this. Now, having said that, they haven't exactly been quite as marvelous on the road this year And the game is in New York next week, right?
Yes, yeah, it's in New York.
So they got to travel across the country, but that's the one. I mean, that's the one, and I believe they should get it. And I think Pete Carroll's a good coach, and the guys are going to be ready, and they'll be on top of their stuff. I just don't see this team choking up at this point. I think that they're a really balanced, real quality football team. So, I mean, anything can happen. If you know, watching this game, if it's taught me anything, it's been anything can happen. Don't rule anybody out. Having said that, I think the Niners can win out, but I think you're really asking a lot to expect the Seattle Seahawks to choke that way.
Yeah, you know, Paul, I definitely agree. I believe that Seattle has too much fortitude right now and a little too much at stake to actually let that go. But not taking anything away from the 49ers, because I believe that they're going to finish strong as well. I believe
there's
that...
There's that 49ers team, you know? They fell behind the eight ball a little bit early, having to go up to Seattle right away, and it seems like they've been playing catch-up all year. If you look at it, they should be able to win out, which means they will finish the season 12-4, which is actually a better record than what they produced last year when they went to the Super Bowl. But they fell behind the Seahawks just early, and they've just been playing catch-up all along. Just a great defense the 49ers have. I mean, I think they matched the Seahawks defense pretty closely, those linebackers. I don't know if I've ever seen a linebacking core like this. And obviously, they can still run the ball. They might have the best offensive line in the country. And maybe just the slight edge that the Seahawks have is that Wilson is a little bit further along in his evolution than Kaepernick has at this point. But, yeah, I think it's going to be just real tough for them to chase him down at this point. And it's going to be real tough for them to go up to Seattle and try to pick up a win in the playoffs in January, because that's such a tough place to play as it is. And as other pundits have been pointing out this week, the home teams really seem to have an edge at this point. You saw what the Saints did to Carolina last night on Sunday Night Football, and it seems like the teams that have the home field advantage going into January are going to really have an edge this year.
I definitely agree with your assessment, Paul. Hey, Paul, you know, of course, this is the last day game, or this was the last day game, and we've been talking about this a little throughout the show, at Candlestick. What will be a couple of things, or what will be the thing that you will remember the most about Candlestick Park?
Terrible traffic.
Absolutely, Paul. I experienced that for the first time yesterday. I don't ever want to go back.
It's terrible. It's just terrible. I mean, it just becomes just such a long day having to I try to leave the house. I live in the East Bay, you know, in Berkeley, and try to leave the house around 9 so I can beat it. And a lot of times I'm coming out of there at, 7, 8 o'clock, and I'm still hitting traffic coming out of it, 2.5 hours after the game. So, I wasn't around. I'm not a Bay Area native, and I wasn't around especially in the old days when they were playing baseball down there. And, you know, Mark Twain used to say the winter he's ever experienced is a summer in San Francisco. And I guess, that's just in a wind tunnel right down there. So going to see the Giants was just miserable. So I feel like there aren't a whole lot of people that are going to be shedding a lot of tears when Candlestick goes down. But from a fan's perspective, and just as a fan of the game and a fan of sports, the catch is just where it is, where it's at. When I think of that stadium, when I think of 49ers football, it's always going to come down to that play, and I think most people will echo that thought.
Yeah, of course you mentioned the traffic, and I have to echo that sentiment. I don't think anybody's going to, especially the neighboring houses and condominiums over there. I'm sure that they won't miss it. At the same time, it is a little sad because you had mentioned something such as the catch, between Joe Montana and Dwight Clark. There's so many great moments that were built at Candlestick. And, of course, Sean Wiley and myself had a chance to experience that as well up in the Pacific Northwest when the Kingdome was imploded. It's tough. It's tough to see one of those great sports venues fall by the wayside. And, of course, it'll fall to, corporate and business structure. Santa Clara has a beautiful stadium awaiting in Levi's Stadium. but it is. It's a little bit bittersweet, you know. As we
it's a little bittersweet to see it going so many, like you said, so many, especially with the 49ers. It wasn't such a bad football venue.
Right.
When it comes down to it, we have these kind of Indian summers here in the Bay Area, so a lot of times Sunday afternoons in the fall are actually pretty pleasant to be out there, and you drive in along the water, really pretty. So definitely from a football perspective, I don't think it's quite as terrible. Like you said, I mean, the traffic, you just can't get away from that. I remember one of you guys sent me a text yesterday about possibly meeting up at 5:30 when you got out of the game, and I was thinking to myself, I don't even want to break the news of these guys, but they're going to have to deal with what's coming out of there. So.
Well, you know what? That was Sean Wally that sent you the text, and, you know, me, you know, being going back and forth to the stadium, I knew that it was going to take about 2.5 hours to get to Berkeley. So,
but I will say this about Candlestick Park. You know, if we, I did a story on memories of Candlestick Park, you know, right before the season began. And maybe the thing we should remember about it the most is that in that 89 quake, you know, this stadium has been criticized in every which way. It was just terrible city planning, put in a traffic corridor in the middle of a wind tunnel, just terrible weather. But in the moment of truth during the 89 quake, she stood up strong when she needed to.
Well, yeah, that's definitely a plus and a positive for everybody that was there then and who's used it since then. And man, all that concrete, it should hold up definitely if they built it right back in the day.
Yeah, it's true. Well, there was some talk that, you know, had they built it, you know, just a few hundred feet in a different direction, or a few hundred yards in a different direction, it could have avoided some of the wind that comes over that hill that way. But if that were the case, it would have been built on landfill. Who knows what would have happened during the quake. So a lot of reinforced concrete in there. It was the first stadium ever built entirely out of reinforced concrete, sort of established an era, you know, of those multi-use stadiums that we'd see. And it's hard to believe, I think it was Richard Nixon who threw out the first pitch in 1960. And at the time, it was just, you know, like the seventh wonder, this stadium that they built. But it got outdated pretty fast.
That's Paul Gackel coming with the great facts here on the Double with the Double S Express. Follow him at Gackel Report on Twitter, GackelReport.com as well. Paul, outside of writing on the Niners and the Giants that you've covered and Stanford as well, you do some hockey analysts for the San Francisco Bulls. Is that correct? As well as...
I do a little color commentary for the Bulls. You know, I'm a Canadian, so hockey's another one of my passions. And to get a little bit of broadcasting experience is always fun.
So how are the Bulls playing this season?
They're coming along. It's their second season. They had finished, I think, 8 out of 9 teams in the Western Conference in the East Coast Hockey League last year. But they just picked up 5 points in 3 games over the weekend, going to down to Southern California to play the Ontario Reign, who's one of the top teams in the ECHL. And then they went to Las Vegas yesterday and picked up 2 points. So they're starting to turn around and playing some good hockey. And, you know, they play out at the Cal Palace, which is another, you know, sort of landmark sporting event. They have, you know, a lot of landmark sporting events and concerts, you know, out here in the Bay Area. Almost every band from Led Zeppelin to The Who to Elvis played out at the Cal Palace. And then the Warriors, of course, won an NBA championship out there. So another kind of classic little venue there for the Bay Area.
Paul Gackel, kind enough to join us on the Double with the Double S Express. Paul, you mentioned you do analyst work for the San Francisco Bulls. Which do you prefer? Because, of course, you're an awesome writer as well. Do you prefer writing or being an analyst?
Yeah, I like writing. I mean, I think that's always going to be my bread and butter, and I like just writing and reporting. That's sort of my thing. But it's fun to kind of wear the different hats from time to time and to be able to get up there and just kind of, you know, be under the headset the way that you guys are, and you guys know all about that. It's pretty fun, and I do the calls with Jason Lockhart, who's the voice of the Bulls, and it's just fun to kind of be up there and banter with him and kind of have a change of pace, get away from the laptop every now and again. But in my heart of hearts, I'll always be a writer. That's, you know, it's kind of in my DNA. My grandfather was a reporter and a columnist, so it's kind of in there. I don't think I can get away from it.
Well, you're definitely flexing your muscle as far as being a jack of trades, man. And you just keep up the great work. We're always pulling for you. And you know you always got a spot here on the double with the Double S Express, my friend.
Thanks, guys. I'm sorry we didn't get to catch up this weekend, but I hope we can do it again. There's got to be another time that we can do it. Maybe I'll come up there to Seattle for the game next year because I've always wanted to check out a game and see what the 12th man is really all about.
Well, awesome, Paul. I'd love to host you for that. And yeah, let's definitely keep in touch and have you on the show here real soon.
You bet, guys. Yeah, give me a shout when the playoffs get underway or when I guess we'll probably have game three, I'm thinking, in January at some time so we can catch up again then. And, of course, always great to be on your show, guys. Take care.
All right. That sounds like a plan.
All right. Today.
Paul Gackle, you can catch him on the Gackle Report. com. You can go online and see some of the great things that he's that he does in the Bay Area. As you, of course, as you hear, hockey, basketball, football, you name it. Again, a jack of trades. Love having Paul Gackle on the show. We will take a quick break, and when we return, we will recap the show, talk a little bit more of sports and what's going on in today's action. Keep it locked in. You're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express as we continue a big show. Show number 30 on the double here. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd as we are both in Northern California, just outside Sacramento. A big show tonight as we have had Max Strong as well as Paul Gackle on as big time guests.
You know, the biggest thing is that, of course, you get the chance, Sean Wally, to come down here to Northern California. And we talk a lot about the great weather that we have in California, period. And, man, this visit that you've had here, it's been quite cold, to say the least. So I believe it's been in the 20s overnight. I believe it was about 45 degrees today. So, man, thanks for bringing that Pacific Northwest weather down to Northern California.
Well, hey, I can tell you that's about 10 to 15 degrees warmer than the high where I'm from in Tri-Cities, Washington. So this is actually not too bad for what I'm getting, you know, and used to back home.
Great trip nonetheless. And of course we, you know, we had the chance to get down to watch your beloved Seattle Seahawks play the San Francisco 49ers. It didn't wind out the way that we thought that it would, but it was a great game nonetheless. I think it was a spirited match by both teams. I have no doubt that Seattle's going to bounce back, of course, playing against the Giants. That's one of the teams that cures the week before. And so I believe Seattle bounces back from that. But a great experience nonetheless, having a chance to talk with Max Strong about his experience with the Seahawks, and of course, the great Paul Gackel with the GackelReports.com and his perspective with the San Francisco 49ers, you know, coming away with some interesting facts and tidbits about, you know, the Seahawks and the 49ers.
And let's not forget that Mr. Gackel said he would want Russell Wilson instead of Colin Kaepernick if he were starting an NFL franchise right now.
And you know, that says a lot, you know, because for one, I mean, Paul is straightforward and right on the money. I wouldn't expect him to say it any other way. Russell Wilson right now is playing lights out football. You know, he's playing mistake free football. He's leading his team up and down the field, and he gives his team a chance to win. 19-7 loss. They still had a chance to win. Or 19-17 loss. They still had a chance to win. Colin Kaepernick, tremendous upside, as Paul was saying, you know, great athleticism, some things that he needs to work and fine tune. You know, one of those things I feel is accuracy. And part of it, after watching both quarterbacks at the same time, I feel is, you know, the delivery of the throw. And so, you know, sometimes Colin is a little bit more mechanical. The ball kind of flies away from him. But when you look at what Russell does, Russell has a fluid range of motion, and most of his balls are on the money. I think over time, Colin can become better, but he's right. Russell Wilson right now would be the guy that I would pattern my franchise around.
Give us a call if you want to talk sports. Lots going on in the past week, in the past couple days, with all the snow in the NFL and the snow all over the country. 888-429-5471, 888-429-5471. As we go a little extended here on the Double with the Double S Express and Sean Boyd, let's talk about all that snow that happened on the East Coast that disrupted some NFL games.
There were some great football games that, you know, that went on yesterday, Sean Wally. One of them that we were watching while we were preparing for the Niners Seahawks game was the snow blizzard in Baltimore. And what an excellent football game that was down the stretch. The Baltimore Ravens, Minnesota Vikings. The game was close, you know, back and forth for most of the game, but 5 touchdowns in the last 2 minutes. Think about that. Was it four or five touchdowns? I believe it was 5 touchdowns in the last 2 minutes. An amazing feat, you know, especially in the snow. The first time that, you know, when Minnesota scored with Toby Gerhardt going into the end zone, I thought the game was over. And the next thing you know, Jacoby Ford, you know, gets a run back, and then Minnesota comes right back, and then, you know, Baltimore comes right back with the final touchdown. You know, I thought this has to be one of the greatest football games ever played, man. And, you know, that was it. You know, I mean, you know, Minnesota can't hang their heads, but man, what a great football game that the Baltimore and Minnesota Vikings game was.
Yeah, that was incredible to watch in the Fox graphics truck, and everybody's going crazy because every time we turn around, another touchdown happens, and there were so many scores in the final 2 minutes. It was ridiculous. It's like nobody had a defense. Where was the defense?
Well, I think the defense was probably on the sidelines, either having s'mores and hot cocoa, or, you know, they just didn't want to be on the field, because that part of the game was a travesty. But it was exciting watching, you know, all three phases of the game actually participating. And that's, you know, the offense, defense, and special teams. But, you know, I'd probably say defense less. You know, there was another game in the snow. Yesterday was the Philadelphia Eagles and Detroit Lions. I thought that game was going to be a lot closer. The snow on the field in Philadelphia was incredible. I believe it was upwards of 8 inches of snow. You could see guys making snow angels. I believe LeSean McCoy had a record-breaking game, rushing-wise, of 200-plus yards on the ground. But, you know, that East Coast really got shook by the snow, but it made for some exciting football.
Absolutely. And Philadelphia taking over 8.5 inches of snow in 1 day was more than their entire total last winter. They only had 8.3 inches all of last year, and they had 8.5 inches in 1 day. They were expecting 3 to 6 more inches today. If they got that, that's over a foot in 24 hours.
You talk about a strong element and trying to stay focused. I mean, can you imagine playing football in 8 inches of snow? I mean, that's first of all, that's a kid's dream, is to play in, you know, snow and you know, get tackled in the soft white powder. But when you're a professional player and you're trying to execute plays at the best of your ability, you know, that is something that, you know, kind of lacks a little bit. Can you imagine being a place kicker, you know, and you're trying to kick a 30 yarder and, you know, you're not able to kick it well, because once you drop the football on the ground, it's engulfed halfway into the snow. So, you know, there are some, there were some exciting games on the East Coast, to say the least.
And as we look at a few of the other games yesterday, you look at the Bengals looking like they're finally taking control, grabbing the reins, and wanting to be that Super Bowl contender in the AFC. Everybody talks about Denver. Everybody talks about Kansas City, who finally got back on the winning side after losing a couple of games. But here was a big matchup between the AFC North Bengals, the AFC South Colts. The Bengals came out on top and are now 9-4 and looking good in that AFC North. And, you know, they are definitely, I don't think sleeper is the right term, because a lot of people predicted them, including guys from NFL Network, to play the Seahawks in the Super Bowl as their big prediction. And it just seems like here it is December and the Bengals finally showed up.
Yeah, you're definitely right, Sean Wally. And, you know, I go on the record as saying that the Cincinnati Bengals definitely deserve, especially Marvin Lewis, deserves a lot of credit for turning his organization around. I'll be the first to tell you that, you know, I jump on the Marvin Lewis should be fired or let go bandwagon, because, you know, how many years is a guy going to get a chance, or is a coach going to get a chance to make a great football program? And then it goes up and down. I mean, I know we talked about Gary Kubiak, of course, he, you know, being released from the Houston Texans this week, and I put Marvin Lewis in that category. But as you mentioned, some of the things that he is doing in Cincinnati right now, and of course having Andy Dalton and, you know, a strong supporting cast around him, you know, this is a great year to prove a lot of naysayers wrong. And, you know, Marvin Lewis, hats off to you, hats off to the Cincinnati Bengals. Of course, you know, beating the Indianapolis Colts, which the Colts were a team that was on the rise in the beginning, and now they're starting to have a little bit of a slide.
The Colts being in the AFC South, let's take a minute and talk about the Thursday night game this past week. The Texans at the Jaguars. The Texans wind up losing to go to 2-11. They started the season 2-0, and they have now lost 11 straight. As you mentioned, Sean Boyd, Gary Kubiak fired, which in my opinion is at least 2 years late. He's a good guy. He was a serviceable backup in the NFL for the Denver Broncos, among other teams. But what have you done for me, not only lately, but over those 8 seasons? Only 2 playoff appearances, and this roster this season for the Texans was stacked, and they're 2-11.
Yeah, this was a team that was supposed to be vying for the AFC championship. When we talked about teams in the preseason, the 2 teams that we talked about in the AFC were the Denver Broncos and the Houston Texans. So this isn't like this was a team that was, you know, primed to be where they're at 2-11. You know, things happen, and I understand that, you know, but when you have guys like J.J. Watt on your team on defense, you have, you know, a breakdown in your offense, Arian Foster being injured, you have Matt Schaub that, you know, was inconsistent at best, and of course you bring in Case Keenan, an undrafted quarterback that comes in, and he's actually leading your team. At some point, the responsibility at the end of the day lies with the head coach. And as you're saying, Sean Wally, this has been something that has been continuous for year in and year out. Definitely a surprise. The other surprise is, of course, you had mentioned the you know, that the Jacksonville Jaguars were playing the Houston Texans. We can't take anything away from Gus Bradley and the job that he is doing with the Jacksonville Jaguars. He's taking a team that is basically still trying to find their identity. They believe that they had, you know, the right quarterback initially. That didn't work out. You know, you bring in your backup quarterback and Chad Henning, and, you know, he's trying to right the ship with the team. But Gus Bradley, of course, you know, having strong ties in Seattle, great guy all around, has taken this team and has made them a presentable team, and they're not looking at being vying for the number one pick in the draft.
Yeah, you mentioned it there with the potential number one pick. Everybody had Jacksonville penciled in as they were going to be the 2014 number one pick in the NFL draft because they had basically a junior varsity team going up against the varsity and the rest of the NFL. And here Coach Bradley has totally tried to reshape that culture in Jacksonville and preach winning and preach consistency and preach the things that he was taught in Seattle under Pete Carroll. And I had a chance to meet and sit with Coach Bradley in Seattle, and he was just a great down-to-earth guy. And you talk to anybody that knows him throughout the league, be it a coach, a player, or a reporter, and they say the same thing, that he's humble, he's down-to-earth, and he's going to get that team in the right direction.
Yeah, and Gus Bradley, I mean, you know, hats off to him and the Jacksonville Jaguars, because again, I mean, they were expected to be the doormat of the NFL. And now when you play the Jacksonville Jaguars, you're going to get a full on battle when you play them. And of course the Houston Texans, you know, eking it out 27-20 against Jacksonville, you know, there's a tremendous upside, you know, in, you know, for the Jacksonville Jaguars moving forward. So Monday night's game. Of course we have the Monday night game, Chicago, and, you know, playing against the Dallas Cowboys. And what can we say about the Dallas Cowboys? You know, you have Tony Romo coming in, and, you know, this is his chance to actually keep pace with the Philadelphia Eagles. Right now, the Chicago Bears are taking it to the Dallas Cowboys 42-21. Now, you know, we talk about quarterbacks and we talk about teams. The Chicago Bears is one that we don't talk about, Sean Wally, and I think we need to give the Chicago Bears some credit. I mean, this is a great football team, and this is one that sticks like a thorn in the side for me, being an Oakland Raiders fan. We're looking at Josh McCown, who is actually playing lights out football for the Chicago Bears, in place of Jay Cutler, who's out with a high ankle sprain. And Josh McCown is looking like, you know, the type of leader that, you know, people thought he was a few years ago. And so, you know, he's got a touchdown tonight out of the 42 points, three touchdowns tonight. And he's playing and doing a great job in place of Jay Cutler. So, you know, I don't know what to tell you about the Dallas Cowboys. You know, it's like what Stephen A. Smith says is, you know, hey, eventually these guys are going to let you down. And as much as you get excited about the Dallas Cowboys, they pull you along. And just when you get on board, the bottom drops out and they disappoint you. And so they're pulling that number again tonight.
Well, it's a huge game, not only in the NFC for both teams, but you look in the individual divisions. The Cowboys need to keep pace with the Eagles, who beat the Lions in the Snow Bowl yesterday. And here they are with a chance to do that, and they're getting blasted in Chicago. Yes, I know it's roughly 15 degrees in Chicago, but it's dry. So it's a very, very cold, but dry. And here it is December. And so again, you're going to have people like myself and everybody else throughout the sports media world saying Tony Romo cannot win games that matter in December.
Well, you know, I must digress on this one, Sean Wally, because we always give a lot to Tony Romo and put a lot of the blame. And let's face it, Tony does deserve a lot of the blame, but he can't bear it all. I mean, when you're looking at Jerry Jones and some of the decisions that he makes as far as an owner is concerned and how he puts his nose into too much stuff, it reminds us a lot of, you know, the late, great Al Davis going forward. And, you know, it brings some tough times for the organization. You know, that defense, you know, once Rob Ryan left, You know, they thought that Rob was the problem last year. Find out that he's not. You know, they bring in, you know, Monty Kiffin, who was supposed to come in and turn this, you know, the Dallas Cowboys defense around. That hasn't worked out as well. And so, you know, there are a lot of problems in Dallas, a lot more than just Tony Romo. So we can't just give it to Tony Romo for that, you know, for some of the non-successes. You know, but Dallas needs some work, man. Every year they have the greatest talent, and every year they let their fans down. And it's just, you know, tonight is another example.
That's the voice of Sean Boyd. I am Sean Wally. This is On the Double with the Double S Express, show number 30. And we're going to get to one more break and come back and talk a little bit of college football and some major signings and movement in the Major League Baseball world. We'll be right back after this.
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, show number 30. Almost in the books here, Mr. Wally. It has been a great show getting a chance to talk about the game yesterday, the Seattle Seahawks 49ers game, having Max Strong on, and also guest number two, Paul Gackle from the GackleReport.com. Getting a chance to talk a little bit about what went on around the league yesterday. And now getting a chance to talk about a little bit of college football.
The Battle of the Tigers, SEC Championship, Missouri versus Auburn, near and dear to your heart, Sean Boyd, the Auburn Tigers. It was a battle. It was a fight back and forth until one group of Tigers took control.
You know, the past couple of weeks, Sean Wally, has been nothing short of miraculous. And that's what's been said, you know, as far as the Auburn Tigers playing. And let's face it, you know, football runs, as Max Strong was saying about the SEC, no doubt about it. When he played in, you know, week in, week out, you know, in the SEC, you know, you're talking about going to Georgia, LSU, Tennessee, Auburn, Alabama, Florida. And, you know, the list goes on and on. You can even include Vanderbilt in there as well. But South Carolina, Texas A&M now, you know, all of these teams, it is a tough road to hoe for the SEC. And, you know, for the fans, it's very tough because week in and week out, you're playing just the top teams in college football. For the Auburn Tigers to do what they did, you know, starting non-ranked at the beginning of the season, to move up the ranks and play the toughest of teams, and the pinnacle came when they played against Alabama. And this was something that, you know, I talked about a few weeks ago before they played Georgia. I said, man, you know, we're going to kick the crap out of Georgia, and then we're going to show the rest of the country how to handle Alabama. When I said that, and you can be rest assured that I was dead serious on what I was talking about, because that Auburn-Alabama game, that Iron Bowl matchup, is nothing short of the biggest game that could ever be played in a young man's life at a collegiate level. And you know, for the Auburn Tigers, it was huge. It was, hey, here's what we've done throughout the year. If we can beat Alabama, we can put ourselves in a position to play for the national title. Tough game. Auburn Tigers are down in the first half. And, you know, I believe if you haven't seen the play, which I believe everybody has seen the play, that, you know, Mr. Davis runs out of the end zone, runs 109 yards into the end zone after a short field goal. Man, all I can say is War Eagle, because, you know, and there's the huge story behind War Eagle. For those of you who don't know, you're going to have to look that up. I can't really explain that to you right now. We're pressed by time. But, you know, for those of you who are listening, all my Auburn fans who are listening right now, War Eagle, because that is the epitome and the example of what Auburn football is you play till the end. And I'm so excited of the things that are happening with the Auburn Tigers and getting a chance to play for the national title. And I still believe that the best is yet to come, because the last two years, the Alabama Crimson Tide have won the national title. They were supposed to win a three-peat. The Auburn Tigers won in 2010. Alabama won one of those before. The last 7 years, the SEC has won the national title. I believe, again, that national title stays in the state of Alabama, but this time it goes back to Auburn, Sean Wally. And hats off to Gus Malzahn and the things that he's doing in Alabama.
Well, Sean, I can tell you that ending to the Iron Bowl, as everybody knows, was insane, ridiculous, unprecedented, unheralded, unheard of, whatever adjective you want to use. It was remarkable. An ending that we have almost never seen in any football game, whether it be high school, college, the pros, just ridiculous. And we haven't had a chance to talk about it yet because we didn't have a show last week, a live show that is, I was busy working for ESPN, and we happened to be in the trucks watching that game, and I had just been able to catch the very end when that field goal went up, and it was short by a couple yards, not much, but a couple yards. And here goes the Auburn returner, 109 yards, and everybody in the trucks, you know, the producers, the directors, the audio guy, everybody can't believe what they're watching, just like what's happening all over the country, seeing history made in the Iron Bowl.
You know, that play, no matter where you know, that's one of the things, one of the plays that you'll ask yourself, where were you when that play happened? And, you know, for me, you know, having the chance for my son to call me, my oldest boy, and of course, you know, he got the chance to be on the show, of course, playing for the Oregon Ducks. And I can tell you, Oregon has a strong pride in their football team. But when he called and he said, "Dad, this was one of the greatest games that I have ever seen." And that, you know, he was riveted, sitting on the edge of his seat, and just the suspense that was just, you know, killing him as the clocks hit zeros. You know, that's the type of game that was. And these are the types of games that the SEC produces. It just so happens that the past few weeks, the Auburn Tigers have been a part of two of them. But at the same time, I mean, you know, that play, Chris Davis running that ball out of the end zone. And, you know, one of the things is in Nick Saban having the chance to do the circuit and go and do interviews, you know, he understands that, hey, you make mistakes, that, you know, putting those big guys out on the field to protect the field goal, he understood was a risk. Now, does he come out and say that it was totally wrong? No, he can't come out and say that, because he was doing what he felt was the best thing for the Alabama Crimson Tide. With that being said, you know, games being put into perspective, you know, you don't expect somebody to run 109 yards. And so that was the miracle part of, you know, the Auburn game. And so I'm just so happy that, you know, my team gets to represent for the national title.
A big game in Pasadena for sure. And we have all kinds of news all over college football and not a lot of time to get to much more. But of course, we've had a shakeup in the Pac-12 with Steve Sarkisian uprooting and leaving Seattle and the University of Washington for USC. And the Huskies today introduced Chris Peterson as their new head coach, the former head man at Boise State. Chris Peterson today saying it was a gut feeling that it was time to take on a new challenge after Peterson had 92 victories at Boise State.
Yeah, you know, what a great feeling for the organization, the athletic organization of Mount Lake, getting a chance to sign Chris Peterson, former head coach at Boise State. I believe the contract is in the terms of 5 years, $18 million. What a great turnaround for the University of Washington to actually find a coach and actually land a coach like this. I want to rewind a little bit back to, you know, Steve Sarkisian, because, you know, I felt like I was the last to know about Steve Sarkisian. And what I mean by that was, is, you know, I really felt like, you know, the Huskies were moving in the right direction, you know, with the understanding that when Steve Sarkisian took over the organization, they were 0-12 the year before. And, you know, Steve takes on this tough task of building an organization or building a program. It didn't move in the direction that everybody thought. You know, the Huskies wound up with some 7-4 seasons, some 7-5 seasons, wound up going to the bowl games, but it just wasn't the big bowl game. I think what struck me and hurt the most, you know, as far as, you know, growing up in Washington State and being a Husky fan growing up, what bugged me the most was, you know, how Steve Sarkisian told, and I believe he was on the Jim Rome show on an interview, and he explained that, you know, he wasn't going anywhere. And Jim Rome asked him blatantly about the USC job. He says, I'm not going anywhere. As a matter of fact, there's a great organization here at the University of Washington. There's a great predecessor in Don James. He had talked about Don James being ill before his passing, rest in peace. And he said that this was something that he wanted to do, was see if he can win more national championships and bring more Pac-12 championships to the University of Washington, more than Don James. And I believe that. And, you know, for Steve Sarkisian to then come out in recent days and take on the USC job, you know, I mean, you know, it's nothing short of just ridiculous to me that somebody can actually say one thing and do something entirely different. So hats off to the University of Washington for actually bouncing back and, you know, not only just getting a coach, but getting the winningest coach in college football. What were you saying his record was? Was it 92-18 over 5 years? I mean, that's ridiculously crazy. And so hats off to the University of Washington for actually bouncing back and finding somebody after a coach that was supposed to be in your corner and was supposed to lead you to victory over the next few years deserts you. And I can't find any words that are worse than deserting. I mean, because, you know, what he did, not only did he leave the program, he's not coaching them in the bowl game that they, you know, deserve to play in, meaning Steve Sarkisian. And so, you know, great job for the University of Washington for finding such a great coach in Chris Peterson.
Switching gears to the Hot Stove League, as the winter meetings in Major League Baseball are set to take place this week, and the Seattle Mariners dropped a bombshell, taking one of the New York Yankees greats in second baseman Robinson Cano and signing him to a 10-year, $240 million contract. All I can say is I don't care about the dollar figure. It's not my money. It's about darn time the Seattle Mariner front office paid somebody that can help this team get better.
Definitely. And you know, when you mentioned the 10-year, $240 million contract, of course, baseball has no salary cap. And, you know, for the Seattle Mariners to make such a move, I mean, let's take a look at this. I mean, Robinson Cano is coming to the city of Seattle. How awesome is that? Who would have thought that last week? Did anybody think that Cano was not going back to the New York Yankees? I mean, you know, everybody thought, hey, they're going to iron this out. But you know, there were talks between the Yankees and Cano of upwards of $300 million. Can you imagine that? I mean, $300 million. That's intense. So for Robinson Cano to say, hey, I want to make Seattle my home for the next 10 years, speaks volumes for the Seattle Mariners for making that move. It's not like they don't have some of the pieces in place. Of course, they have King Felix. That is one of the best aces in the game. They just have to find some other players to find a better bullpen, of course, but find some other pieces to put in place, and Seattle will become one of the premier teams to play against. For you, me, myself, also being a Seattle Mariner fan, you're looking at Jay-Z coming to Seattle, man. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you look at last Thursday, Friday, reports were that Jay-Z and Robinson Cano were in town, and Jay-Z, of course, having taken up a sports marketing business to where he represents players, and Robinson Cano was the first to jump on board with Jay-Z, and now you have Jay-Z in town in Seattle, and all of a sudden, everybody's like, yeah, right. Seattle's just a pawn in this chess game. It's just going to up the ante, and the Yankees are going to sign him. And then all of a sudden, on Friday, the hammer drops that they've agreed to an agreement in not New York, but Seattle. And it's not very often in the past decade that a free agent has chosen the Seattle Mariners over the New York Yankees. And that says a lot about what not only Jack Zarensic has in mind, but the management and ownership in Seattle, that they really do want to spend money and they have it to spend.
You know, and again, Sean, you have to say hats off to Jay-Z as well. I mean, you know, there are a lot of these entertainers that have the notion that they can come in, they can represent an athlete and try to get them whatever money. Of course, this goes all the way back to Master P representing Ricky Williams. And we all know that debacle as far as, you know, the trade that went to the Dallas Cowboys between the New Orleans Saints. And, you know, man, Jay-Z.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.